Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations and find special deals on Ante Up gear and great poker products at anteupstore.com. Ante Up. It's your poker magazine.
From the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's July 27th, 2012. You're listening to the best PokerCast in the world. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm a very sleepy Scott Long.
Sleepy? Come on, man. You only got up at 4 a.m. today.
I mean, that was, I've done some crazy business trips, and usually they're pretty long ones. This was 48 hours. I'm like, piece of cake! 48 hours? I'm not even going to notice I'm gone. I noticed I was gone.
Oh, man. 48 hours? Come on. Last time I went to Vegas, I was up 42 hours. You had 48 hours to actually get some sleep.
Yeah, but you were playing some of that, though.
That's true.
Playing, you know, here's the thing. There's like a sliding scale. You know, you're using the newsroom, not to sound too inhumane, but a sliding scale on, you know, whether a boat accident in Nigeria versus a boat accident in the United States, you know.
Yeah.
There's a sliding scale on actual time awake and actual time awake playing poker.
That's
true. For every hour playing poker, it's really like 20 minutes of being awake. And on this trip, I played no poker. So it was 48 straight hours of meetings and a little bit of sleep.
Man.
So, but yeah, I got up at 4 a.m. this morning. But here I am, bright and bushy-tailed, professional, ready to go.
Dedication, baby. Absolute.
Not even complaining about being sleepy.
Dedication.
But yeah, the last time I played cards was an interesting day.
Yeah.
We got the home game going again, which we hadn't in a while, which is always fun. Full table, which was good, too. And we had a couple fun things there. We introduced Big O for the first time.
Yeah, and we'll hear a little more about that later on in the show, and we have our bracelet winner, Stephen Loeb, on the show. But I'm always fearful when you get more cards in your hand. You know, especially because we were playing at pot limit, not limit, like we did at MGM when we played this game the first time. And it's interesting. You can lose a lot of money with an extra card in your hand. And it's a brutal game. I found myself folding a lot, believe it or not, and I felt like I really needed to tighten up even more, which I know that they tell you to do. That's the edict, is the more cards you have, the more you tighten up. But it could very well have cost me my entire stack. It's a brutal game.
Yeah. I certainly figured out how brutal it was against you. I mean, I was having a good day all day. I was hitting cards and making good reads and stuff, and built that stack up pretty high. It was my anniversary. I was getting ready to go out to dinner, and I'm like, hey, I'm going to give you a pay for the wife's dinner tonight. And then Big O.
Then Big O. Big O no is what you should call
it. Oh, no. And, you know, you're right. I love game. Even though I ended up getting taken to the woodshed on this game, I still love it. I think it's a lot of fun. There's a lot of it definitely is. Of all the action games, I mean, that's kind of like the new cliche in poker now. It's an action game.
Yeah.
Because everybody's looking for an action game, and that's what they're saying. But this truly is, you know. There weren't a lot of people folding. You might have been the only one folding sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah, I really was. Because it seemed like everybody, it was their first introduction to the game. And I had, as you know, you play as much as I did with it. We had a little experience with this game. Even out in California, we were playing five-card Omaha, but it was high-low. But we still had experience with it. And I realized right away that I need to get away from hands quicker than most.
Yeah. And you know, here's a good lesson. It's not really a Big O lesson here, but two hands wiped away all my profit for the day. At least I didn't go home a loser, which was nice.
Right, you still won, but yeah, you had a big day going into the Big O.
Yeah, and it's a big day into the Big O. And into the big outhouse. That's what the O stands for. But no, I had a hand against you, and again, the lesson here isn't really a Big O. It's more just, you know, playing good solid poker, and I let myself not play good solid poker here. I had a pair of jacks in the hole, and the flop came jack 10 7.
Right.
And you know, here's the thing. In Omaha, and particularly in Big O, you need to have the redraws. I didn't have any redraws, I don't think, in that hand. So I wanted to get this over quickly. So there was a bet from Gambit, right? And then you raised pot.
Right. I think. No, and, I raised... He raised pre-flop, and then we got one other caller besides me and you. And then when the flop came that way, he bet $4, and I raised 8 more. I made it 12 to go, and you called.
And then did I call?
Just called. That's why I got. You just called there, and that's why I was interested in that, because you called 12, and he folded, and then we went to the turn.
All right. Well, anyhow, so I had a top set on that board.
Obviously. Yeah, top set.
And then at that point with the action, I really put you on the 8-9 there, which you wouldn't normally in an Omaha game, but it's Big O. You can have that trailing 9 or the trailing 8 in your hand.
Yeah.
And I'm like, all right, I'm going to have to improve on the turn, or I'm going to shut it down, which is funny because you were saying the same thing to yourself.
Yep, exactly.
As I found out later. And wouldn't you know it, the poker gods blessed us both with letting us hit that turn card. Nice, pretty 10 there. And I'm like, all right, I got top boat. I'm not going anywhere now. And, of course, you were sitting there with quads at that point now. And so, yeah, we ended up getting in. I think you checked to me, right? And
yeah.
I made a...
$12 bet.
It was a pretty decent bet, I thought.
Yeah.
And then the river was a king, which I didn't want to see because now I'm like, all right, now I don't have top boat anymore.
Right.
And you checked to me, which is a brilliant move, actually, the more I thought about it later on. And at that point, what I should have done was check behind and hope that I won that pot.
Yeah.
But no, I was like, you know what? I'm going to squeeze a little more value out here. Don't like that king. I can't imagine that's what he's in. I put you on the straight, but that's only two of your cards.
Right.
You got three more cards in this game. Very easily going to have pocket kings there. So I put in a small bet, and of course, then you went all in on me because it would have been less the pot,
right?
And but it's still a substantial bet.
Yeah, it was $47.
Yeah, Skittles. So I immediately got up, and I'm like, God, I can't believe that you hit those kings, and then you I didn't hit those kings.
It was absolutely the most animated I've ever seen you. At a poker table. I mean, you argue with us or something like that at a table and you get loud or something. But I mean, when a hand hit you, I'd never seen you stood up. I've never seen you do that. You stood up and you're like scratching your head and you're like, did you really stay in this hand with pocket kings to the end? And I thought, oh my God, he thinks I have kings. This is great. I don't have kings. I can actually tell him I don't have kings, you know.
I can actually not lie to him. But of course, when you say that, then I immediately am like, quad 10, seriously?
Yeah, I couldn't believe it.
There's nothing else that you would have in that situation but the two hands that beat me. And so I let myself call because you were all in. And it was like, oh, so another 40 Skittles in this. I don't know how big that pot was. It was probably...
It was ended up being like 150 or so.
Yeah, that's what I figured. So, and you know, and that's when I thought about this later. I was like, this is a huge leak, and not only my game, but a lot of people's games. Because again, you're thinking like, quads. You really can't have quads. It's just so rare; it doesn't happen. Well, it does happen. And at the end of the day, there. I mean, what are you really going to make a move on me with that short?
Yeah.
With stacks. That I can beat, and it just didn't make any sense, but I called anyhow, and you showed me the quad tens, and I opened a vein, and ruined anniversary dinner, and, I learned from it again later. I mean, one, I should have checked behind on that river, but two, once you moved in on me, it didn't make sense. It has to make sense. You have to put things together.
Yeah. The only two things I wanted to mention were that this hand was exactly, almost exact, other than the fact that it was hold'em, so it was much harder to happen, but the last hand I ever played against our good friend John Lanier, who passed away in January, it was almost exactly the same. I had pocket queens, he had pocket tens, and it came queen 10 rag, and then a turn was a 10, and we got it all in. It was the exact same thing. The turn and everything was exactly the same, except it was queens instead of jacks. And but the only thing I wanted to mention was I thought that I was trying to sell to you Jack 10 by not telling you I didn't have kings, because I thought that would be realistic. If I had Jack 10, 8, 9, that's a realistic type of hand that you would play in this game. So if I had 8, 9, I had the straight, which is why I raised and then came along with you. And then when it went Jack 10, I was thinking that I could have you know, a hand that made a different boat or something. You know what I mean? Because yes. Jack 10 is a smaller boat, but it's still a boat. And so that's what I was trying to convey to you with the, I don't have kings, Scott. I don't know what to tell you, but I don't have kings. You know, and then, but
it was a terrible sales job, but I bought anyhow. So.
The only reason why I, when you said my check was good, was because I thought to myself, you didn't raise me on the flop, so I thought you had the straight, and then when the board paired on there, I thought, okay, Scott has one of two hands. He has 8-9, and if he checks here, he definitely has 8-9, but if he bets now, he can't bet with anything other than pocket jacks. So I checked the turn, and when you bet, I knew you had pocket jacks. So that's why I just called again on the turn. And on the river, that's why I checked to you on the river, because I knew if you had pocket jacks, you wouldn't get away from that full house, and you would think that I had a straight or a smaller full house or something, and you'd have to bet again. That was my thought process in that hand.
Yeah, and that's what's really weak about that last bet for me, was that if I really put you on that straight, there's no way you're calling that. You're not putting another dollar in that pot.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm just throwing that away. That's the proverbial only going to get called, or in this case raised, by a better hand.
Yeah.
Spot, that's why I really prefer, is because you have so much more information, you can make those kind of decisions a lot easier.
Yeah.
You know, you have a lot more cards, you would think it would be more complicated, but it's not. A lot of stuff makes a lot more sense in Omaha to me than it does in Hold'em. And that's exactly one of the reasons, and then whoop, just threw it out the window.
But you do like the game, though. You think we'll call it more? And
oh, I absolutely love it. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, I hate to say this, because, you know, Pot Live in Omaha is a more real game, I guess, maybe is the right word. I mean, this is kind of a bastardized game.
Yeah.
As sick as it sounds, you know, somebody was out there going, you know what, Pot Live in Omaha is not enough action for me.
I know.
What can we do to get some more action to this game? That I want to meet that guy. But no, you know, here's the thing, and it kind of goes counter to what you're saying, but in the home game, I just like to play hands.
Yeah.
You know, I'm just having fun, and, you know, no one ever gets burned. And even when I have a losing session, I don't really dwell on it too much, you know, other than if I make bad decisions. But Big O, I mean, I was in every hand. I'm like, you know what, I'll see a flop and see how it goes. And I think you could do that. I think you could see a lot of flops with that game. The key is, like it always is in Omaha, is to run like a Kardashian's chasing you when that flop doesn't hit you really hard, you don't have redraws. And that's where I think we'll talk to our guest later on today, and I think he's going to say the same thing, that that's what separates the people, is it's not the bad, you're not a bad player for seeing flops, you're a bad player for thinking that you're straight with no redraw is going to hold up.
Yeah. Or needing runner,
or your two pair is good, yeah. Or anything like that. You need to be able to get at it. And pretty good at playing this, PLO. I mean, you can get in, unless it's raised pre-flop, you can get in pretty cheap, you know. So it's a different thing. I mean, you might as well speculate a little bit, because you can hit a big hand.
Yeah,
you get more opportunity big hand.
And seven or eight handed, too. Every card, when we're done dealing it, there's like three cards left or something.
There's no stuff.
Yeah, there's no stuff. So exactly. So you got to know that if someone's in the hand with you, the nuts is there. You know what I mean? Or it's close. And you definitely have to be able to get away from your hand. And I think that's true with a lot of the disciplines of poker. That
sure.
You know, you don't mind seeing with split nines and stud. You don't mind seeing a fourth card when none of your other cards are shown in the door cards. But somebody's got a king and they're still betting into you on the fourth street. It's time to get away, because the little baby two pair isn't going to do it. You know, so. It's just that's the discipline of poker, is just getting away from the hands when you absolutely need to, and not sticking with it too long. But one of the things that cracked me up during the day was, I get there and I'm like, hey, can we put on the golf? And you're like, golf? And I'm like, yeah, it's a major today. Tiger's in the hunt. Golf? Who's gonna watch golf? And like, everybody at the table wanted to watch it, but you were in such an aversion to having golf on TV, you wouldn't let it go until it ended.
I enjoyed playing with you guys all day, but the day ended crappy, and it started crappy. Alright, here's the thing. I used to golf, I used to enjoy it, I probably still enjoy it, I just got tired of how long it takes and all that, but I enjoy golf playing, I think it's a fun game. I have never in my entire life understood why people watch it on TV. I don't know what the allure is. There's absolutely no action. There's just a guy in a ridiculous outfit hitting a little ball and a camera panning up and the ball hitting the ground and then a bunch of people golf clapping. There's nothing to it. Absolutely nothing to it. But people are transfixed to it like it's the latest celebrity sex tape. And I don't get it. I just don't get it. And then to find everybody at the table was like, ooh, you got to be kidding me. The only good thing was my back was the TV, so I wasn't forced to watch it.
Oh, man.
So I ended up watching Smokey the Bandit. So.
Yeah, yeah. And we had most of the afternoon trying to figure out what Jackie Gleason was actually saying in the real version versus the dubbed, you know, censored version on CMT. Oh, my God. Calling everybody crumb bums and stuff. And we're like, well, we know he didn't say that on TV.
You got a long way to go. That's kind of how I felt watching Gulp.
The final thing I'll say about the day was I was playing against Doc in a hand, Dr. Frank, and, you know, it was like limit hold'em or something. And I just kept betting into him, hoping he would fold. And when somebody has ace-king or king-queen and the flop comes king-king and you're bluffing into them, if you're going to get caught bluffing, at least show the cards and say, yeah, you caught me, so you get some sort of advertising out of it. All I did was just fold and, like, duh. I mean, at least let them know that, yeah, you were bluffing and you're capable of that, so later on you can reap the benefits. I didn't even show my hand. I just lost, like, $20 to him bluffing for no reason. Not smart. So don't do that, people.
Yeah, neither one of us were smart this day.
No, I was glad you walked away with like $11 or 11 Skittles, and I walked away with like 30. Yeah, so at least we won, but it could have been so much more if we had just played correct.
Yeah, but hey, you know, the home game is all about having fun.
Yeah, and we had a good time.
Definitely was fun. So, hey, a couple things that happened to me outside the table real quick before we get to the real part of the show. You know, I was doing my little monthly proofing over at the poker room, and of course lost money because that's just the way it goes. But I thought this was kind of interesting, funny, annoying, lots of adjectives you could put in there. We were in a cash game, 1-2 no limit. It folds around to me. I'm in the small blind. I turn to the big blind, as I always do, and say chop, because I always chop because it doesn't make any sense not to chop. And he looks back at me. He's like, you know, I really want to see a flop with this hand. And I'm like, okay. And I muck. I am not going to fund your 980 to 1 shot at a high hand. I'm sorry. I'm just not going to do it.
How about this? You turn to the guy and you say, I know what you're doing. You want to make a high hand here. So here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to throw my buck in there. We're going to check it down. If you win the high hand, you give me a percentage. If you don't, you give my buck back. That's what I'd say to him.
And thereby disqualifying. Yeah. Actually, it would be funnier, probably.
Yes, but Scott, I would say it with my eyes.
I think that's what that guy was trying to say. And then he finally had to say, I really want to see a flop. But like, nope. Should have been in a better position, because I'm not giving you a dollar to see a flop.
Oh, man. You're such a party pooper.
Oh, man. I mean, these people chasing this stuff just cracks me up. And, yeah. You know, for a dollar there. Because then, here's the thing. Is even if I threw a dollar in, I'm feeling charitable. You know what? I was going to give it to the crippled kids, but I'm going to give it to you so you can get a high hand. You still have to get $20 or so in the pot. Yeah. Plus hit your hand.
Yeah.
And it just almost never happens. I mean, the odds of hitting the high hand and then having me hit enough of it that I feel like I could beat you to put in $20, it's just ridiculous. It's a waste of time. It's a waste of time.
It is. It's hilarious.
And I wanted to prove to the table it's a waste of time. Of course, they probably all hate me now, so I didn't probably prove anything to them. But
he did win the jackpot. He won your dollar.
He won, yes. Which he immediately gave to the dealer. And I'm like, all right, that's karma. All right, and then, you know, obviously I just got back from South Florida. Not a lot of poker to update folks on that, but I did have a quick funny story. I went to the new Marlins Park because I'm trying to hit these baseball stadiums when I travel now. Gorgeous place, right, other than they insist on closing the roof. you know, it's not bowling, folks. It's baseball. It needs to be played outside. I don't care how hot or rainy it is. But gorgeous place, right? And the thing I like about it both is they had the most variety of food of any of the big league parks I've been to. You don't have to settle for a hot dog. And so I went to the Taste of Miami section, right? You know, because you know, went in Rome, right? And they had an empanada stand. And I never thought I liked empanadas, but on one of our last cruises, Laura and I got some empanadas, and I'm like, ooh, man, I got to be eating these. And it was only $3.50. I mean, how often do you find a substantial snack at the ballpark for $3.50?
Yeah.
So I went up, and I'm like, all right, one chicken empanada, please. And I reached in my wallet, and I had nothing but 50s.
Uh-oh.
All right, and I'm like, all right, I'm not going to put this on a poker table. That's suicide, right?
Right.
I'm going to burn them here at the ballpark today. So I gave her a $50 bill, which I realize is a bit ridiculous paying for a $3.50 snack with a $50 bill. But, you know, hey, gave her the $50 bill.
Yes. Wait, wait, wait. I think you dropped out there. You gave her a $50 bill and what?
She rang it up as a 20.
As a 20?
Change is $16.50. And I'm like, whoa, hold on. That's a 50. And it was still the top of the
20 stack.
So she saw it. She's like, oh, okay. So she had to call her manager over, right? And her manager's like, just give him the correct change. And she's like, okay, what is that? He pulls out his iPhone and
what?
Does the calculating and says $36.50.
What?
And I'm like, whoa, hold on, that's $36.50 there, sport. And then, so they turn to a third employee, and they're sitting there scratching their heads, and they're like, yeah, $46.50, you're right. I'm like, I know I'm right. I'm really kind of worried that you guys can't figure that out even with the aid of a calculator.
Let's see. You thought I paid with a 20, but I actually paid with a 50, so 20 from 50 is 30. Just give them 30 bucks more. What's the deal? Oh, my God. I needed three employees to figure that out.
So the curse of the 50 is not regulated to the poker table, Chris. You just can't use those things anywhere.
Because nobody sees them anywhere. They never see a 50. It's hardly ever used, I guess. So they just freak out when they see it. I thought you were going to say they didn't have enough money to pay you the change or something, you know?
But here's the thing. The empanadas were so good, I went back for three more. Which kind of defeats the purpose of being excited about them being $3.50. And if I had the balls, because I had three more 50s in my wallet,
yeah,
I would have
paid
each time just to see whether they learned their lesson.
That, I was hoping you would do that. That'd be hilarious. Oh, my God.
All right, we got no hotline this week, so go ahead and give us a call at 813-448-1120. We got a brand new sponsor, but I can't announce them until we have something to give away.
Yeah.
So call the hotline next week, and we'll be happy to reveal our new sponsor for swag.
Okay, our mailbag comes from, I'm assuming this is our ambassador, right?
It's our esteemed Missouri ambassador. Yes,
yeah, Don from Missouri, he said he's looking at the World Series poker schedule for the main event and noticed something interesting. This year, there were 3 day ones. Once you make it through day one, you move to day two with the same flight. Flights aren't combined until day three. In the past, flights A and C combined for day two and B and D combined. Here's the interesting part. Is there an advantage to playing the day with the biggest field, which is usually the last day? That day will have the most chips in play, and you will have 2 days to collect them. I would expect the chip leaders going into day three will be mostly from the bigger field starting day. Do you think this is a valid way to look at this structure? Bigger stacks on day three seem like a huge advantage to cashing and possibly winning.
Yeah, and he sent this to it before the World Series course, so I don't want anybody to think that he's a empanada salesperson. when he sent this to me, I'm like, oh, that's interesting. But then here's the thing. When we were out there at the World Series and I watched this, you know, we've been pretty generous with our praise on the World Series staff this year, and well-deserved,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
I meant to go back and look at the numbers, but obviously I've been traveling all day and I'm bleary, but I think they did a very good job, they being the World Series staff, of anticipating this and knowing that a bunch of people are going to sign up for the last day. So I believe, again, I'm sailing without a net here right now, but I'm pretty sure that day three was pretty comparable to days one and two in terms of total numbers. Am I wrong?
I think day three was a record. So
I think it was like three. It was more than 3,000, right?
Yeah, it was more than
3,000, and they had 6,000 total. So it was about, I mean, relatively,
right,
pretty close.
It was, well,
the same thing.
It was probably an average of 1,500 the first day, 1,500 the second day, and 3,000.
Yeah, but those combined,
day.
That's the thing. They combined. So really, the thing is, you got 2 days. That day two, you're going to have about the same number of people in both day twos.
Well, how
it's all going to come from one day three. I mean, one day one C rather than combining. You know what I mean?
Well, let me see. I'm trying to figure this out here. So there was only 3 day ones. And when you went to day two, you were still with your same field.
No. Day 1A and 1B combined in day two.
No.
Day 2A.
No. In the past, A and C would combine and B and D would, he said. But in here, you move into day two with the same flight. So that means if there were 3,000 in your starting day, and then day two, you're playing with the same people from day one that you were on.
I thought they combined days one and two. Okay. All right. Well, that changes things.
Yeah. So now your flights aren't combined until day three, which is what he says in the letter. So in other words, if you had 3,000 people on day three, or on day 1C, you're still playing with the people who are left over from day 1C on your day two, and day 1B is still playing with their 1B, and 1A is still playing with their 1A on day two. On day three, all of the flights are combined.
Okay.
So now he's wondering if, because it's a bigger field on day 1C, you have an advantage because there's more money in play. And I don't think that really matters, because it's still percentage. It's still you'll get to the 10% of the field remaining the same amount of time as, you know, and it's exponential. It's the amount of people that you have. Even though there's more people in the field, more chips, you still qualify sooner, you know, because if it's 3,000, they'll take 300. Whereas it's 1,500, they'll take 150. So, I mean, you still have the same on it. To me, it seems like even though there's more people in the field, you're still only playing against 9 guys around with you, and it's basically the same amount of time because you're getting to a higher number to qualify for that 10% or whatever it was that they broke down. I'm not even sure if they did that. They just played for time, right?
Yeah.
The first day, you played for 10 hours.
I was just looking it up there, and where I got confused is the first 2 day flights did come back on the same day, but they played in separate rooms.
Separate rooms, that's what it was.
Yeah. So,
so in other words, when you're playing, like even if it's 3,000 people, the first day they played for 10 hours and that was it.
Right.
Right. So you're playing for the same amount of time, and you're always playing with 10 people at your table. It makes or 9,
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah.
It makes no difference. You still have the same amount of chips.
Yeah. There's more people in it, but you're right. The actual people you're playing at a table.
Yeah, change. Yeah, and you're playing for the same amount of time for 10 hours, and if they did a percentage thing, then again, it's still a percentage of the overall field, so the more people in the field, the more people qualify, so that means you get to that qualifying number probably a little quicker, maybe, I don't know. But I don't think there's that much of an advantage. It'd be different if it was... I just don't see there's an advantage, really.
Well, I'm not going to argue now. Actually, I wasn't arguing before, I was just thinking it.
Yeah.
Making more sense by totally twisting the truth.
Well, everyone here knows how tired you are, so we'll give you a pass this week.
All right, Don. Well, we appreciate the email. Send you a deck of J Design playing cards, the official playing cards of Antiup. You can pick up your own decks in the Antiup store at antiupstore.com. And remember to send us your mailbags and other questions or hilarious put downs of Scott at podcast at antiupmagazine.com. And if we use your stuff on the air, we will send you something great.
Call the floor this week comes from Christy in Maine, who's one of our regulars on the show now, via email. She says, "We are at the final table of a tournament in a New Hampshire poker room with 5 people left. The person we'll refer to here as Max had been drinking beer and Crown Royal all day, and he started to swear at the table and talk dirty."
Ooh.
Wow. Security in the floor was called over, and they tried to talk him down. We stopped playing to see what the floor was going to do. The floor did not stop the clock and took about 15 minutes of talking and yelling. They decided to give him a 1-round penalty, which would effectively put him out of the tournament. Max flung his chips across the table and onto the floor. Finally, the floor said we could play on while they continued to argue with him next to the table. He soon was chipped out and was given 5th place money and sent out the back door of the poker room. Should the floor have done something different?
All right, here's what Jody says. He says, "I see situations like this often. Once the situation caused final table play to stop, I would have paused the clock or made the time right after the situation was handled. Poker is an emotional game. When dealing with emotional players, it is a job of the floor staff to remain calm, defuse the situation, and help the upset player maintain as much dignity as possible throughout the situation. These upset players are usually regular customers we'd like to see frequently. I was taught early in my career to always get disruptive players away from the other players and to deal with them discreetly. Removing upset players from their audience helps to calm things down in most instances and helps to prevent embarrassment to the upset player. I probably would have excluded this player from coming back for a substantial period of time after the scene he made on his way out of the tournament.
That's brilliant right there when you talk about taking them away from the table, because even then you get other players saying stuff and provoking him or whatever, and it's just, that's a brilliant thing to do, is just get them away from the table and talk them down without anybody else contributing to it. So very smart.
Yeah, and if he would have got them away from the table too, then the clock is running and people are playing, and there's less of a problem there as well too. You know, that being said, it's always difficult when you're dealing with somebody that's been drinking and combative. Obviously, this guy is throwing chips and stuff, so that's a no-win situation for a floor. But yeah, I think Jody's spot on. Just get him away and let the tournament play. And if they decide to calm down, then great. If they don't, then too bad.
The other thing, too, is he's talking dirty at the table. What the hell?
Yeah.
That's bizarre. That is really bizarre.
Was he Brett Michaels? All right, Christy, you've received swag within the past year, so we won't send you anything, but we will send somebody that sends the next call to floor if they haven't. So email your questions for Jody to podcast@neomagazine.com, and we'll send you something great like a T-shirt from PMS Pokerwear, which sells hilarious shirts for gals and guys, the Annie Up Store at AnnieUpStore.com. And at the home game this week, Dr. Frank was proudly wearing his PMS Pokerwear shirt.
Yep.
And he mentioned, hey, this is my swag.
Hey, last call for our annual fan survey. You visit AnnieUpMagazine.com/survey before August 1st. Have your voice heard and be entered for thousands of dollars of great prizes, including grand prize of lunch and a one-hour lesson from former world champ Chris Moneymaker.
That's right. You have just a couple days, so go ahead and fill that up.
Pretty huge.
And while you're on our website, go over to AnnieUpMagazine.com/ambassadors and apply to be one of our new ambassadors. We're hiring for Central California, Deadwood, and the Seattle area now.
Yep. Very good.
And don't forget our 2002 poker cruise schedule at AnnieUpMagazine.com/cruise. Plenty of things to do on our website.
You said 2002.
Well, 2002.
Wow. Back in time. Now that's a vacation I want to take.
We were probably on a schooner back then.
And that was before the poker boom, so like nobody's going to be there.
It's not a schooner! two more cruises coming up August 27th out of Port Canaveral. We still got a couple giveaways left at Palm Beach Kennel Club, Tampa Bay Downs, Ebo Greyhound Park. And of course, you have just as much time to submit your video to Blue Shark Optics as you do to take our annual fan survey. Get that in by August 1st, and the winner will be announced. And then, of course, November 10th out of Baltimore, and there are continuing giveaways up at Dover Downs, and very soon we will have our 2013 schedule. That's why I'm so tired. So down in Miami talking to those folks.
Well, while you were gone, some stuff happened around the world, so let's see how our NEUP news desk is shaping up.
All right, the World Series of Poker has announced its crowded circuit schedule for 2012-2013, which features new events at River Rock in Vancouver, which is the circuit's first international stop, Horseshoe Cleveland, Foxwoods, and Harris Cherokee, where they just recently got live dealers. A record 20 events are on tap this year, beginning with the IP Biloxi on August 9th and ending with the National Championship at Harris New Orleans in May.
I guess that explains why Foxwoods left the WPT, you know. They got this deal now with the World Series, so should be interesting. Yeah, a lot of new stops. And I have to wonder, when is enough going to be enough? I mean, now it's 20 stops. I mean, how many stops are they going to have?
Yeah, it's you know, I kind of had a feeling this was going on, because I've been talking to a couple poker room managers over the past year that host them, and they were telling me that they were getting calls saying, hey, can you shift your dates a smidge here, a smidge there, and I had a feeling it had to do with both the Horseshoe Cleveland and Harris Cherokee, because I figured they were trying to squeeze those in.
Yeah.
I was really shocked to see River Rock and Foxwoods on there, and pleasantly surprised. It's nice to see them, you know, branching out and doing some other places, but you're right. there wasn't enough room in the schedule for all this, so some of them are overlapping. You know, hopefully they're not too far away from each other, so it's not really competing too much, but they will have to overlap, and really don't have much more time left. I mean, the best they can do is, you know, start it right after the main event now.
Yeah.
You know, July, they could probably squeeze a couple more events in if you started right in July, and then you just have no break whatsoever. But aside from that, they don't have much more to go. And you got Horseshoe Cincinnati opening at some point this year, too. Are you going to tell them that they can't have an event next year?
Yeah, unbelievable. Okay, in the face of a plunging stock price, a top Zynga executive confirmed this week that the social networking gaming king is actively pursuing the development of a product in the real money gaming. Will likely launch internationally in 2013.
Yeah, no big sprock here.
Yeah, no surprise.
Before that, they were eventually going to come out and say it. Now they're just out there and certainly being smart and doing it internationally, getting their feet wet. And, certainly I think they're going to be a player in some of these interstate options that come up, I would think. Particularly for some of the smaller states, you know, because Zynga has such of that player base already built in.
Right.
You would think you'd get to that player liquidity question that we're talking about. But we'll see. All right, and finally, a Long Island judge has been censured by the New York Commission on Judicial Conduct for playing poker at a Fraternal Order of Eagles clubhouse where a rake was taken.
So, basically, they just slapped him on the wrist, right? That's all that really means. They're just not happy with him.
Yeah, it's a censure. I mean, sometimes that could be kind of career marring, I guess. Right. So, I mean, it sounds fairly minimal to us, but I guess, you know, in the judicial standings. But I would like to say, I would think the judge would say, you know, he's probably got some good ribbing from his other judge. Playing poker. He's like, come on, you know you were in that game, too. Fraternal Order of Eagles.
Unbelievable.
And I believe it said that really it wasn't, you know, a problem for him to be playing poker. They don't really, you know, this is not the clergy. But because obviously a rake was being taken, which is not kosher. So,
well, what happened was Matt Damon came in and read their hands blind. They got ticked
off.
That's
right. And somebody got upset because he wasn't going to clerk for him that year. And and then, you know, what happens? The judge, he's a widow in the sequel. Just can't win.
And you just can't let that go, can you? You don't like the fact that I killed her off. It's 10 years later. He was already 70. How old do you think his wife is? Come on, there's a good chance she died. It's the only way I can get him to Vegas. All right. O'Malley's Move, we finally get to wrap it up this week. It's a three-parter, but remember, it was a 1-2 no limit hold'em game. We flopped trip kings. We have ace king. And Scott and I said what we were going to do. What happened was we ended up leading out for $8. It folded to the button, who raised to 30. We raised to 100. He goes all in and says, I hope you don't have what I think you have.
All right, so it's hard for me to imagine with that action and that comment that we're ahead here. He could have something like king, queen, of course, and be afraid that we have what we have. But it seems to me like this is pocket eights, and if you play the hand back, it's entirely a possible line of action from someone with pocket eights, all the way from preflop to this pivotal moment. You know, unfortunately, I don't think we know the stack sizes here. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah.
But that makes a big difference to me on my decision. If it's a small amount, then, you know, hey, there's not much risk here. I'm not going to get bluffed off this hand, and I'll call and roll the dice. But if I'm playing for my stack here, I think I'm going to have to be the oddly conservative Scott and lay this down.
Wow. That's impressive, because I just cannot fold, I don't think, here. I just can't. Especially since it wasn't raised pre-flop. I just felt like the way it went, if he had eights, he'd have raised. And if he had king eight, I guess king eight.
He would raise the pocket eights? He was.
Maybe. Free flop.
Yeah, there's a lot of people in this pot.
Yeah, get them out. Eights aren't going to win against 10 people,
no.
Right?
If they flop, yeah, that's what you do. You're set mining at that point. That's
right.
Exactly what I would never raise with eights like that, with that many limpers in. Because you know someone's going to call you. And then you're going to have to play them based on eights. I would rather set mine here and then stack somebody.
All right.
Because they're going to say, hey, it wasn't raised, so no one has pocket eights. See?
Well, I agree with you. It is an odd comment. But I think that saying he hopes he doesn't have what he thinks he has, to me, if he thinks he has a hand that beats him, why would he shove? So it just really was weird to me. But I don't think I'm going anywhere. Two hands beat us. And one of them I thought was a raising hand. You didn't think it was. So I'm going to call, and let's see what happens.
Hello once again. You know, if he's got the eights, he's got us beat. We call. We're not going to be afraid of monsters under the bed. If we had king-queen or king-jack, this would be a much more difficult decision. But since we've got the best kicker, there's not much more we can do. Our opponent frowns and turns over king of diamonds, jack of clubs. Yes! We couldn't have asked for a better situation. The pot is a massive $1,159. This could be the biggest pot we've ever been involved in. The turn is the three of clubs, and the river is the no! Jack of hearts? A pot we had a hammer lock on is now being pushed the other way. Our opponent sheepishly apologizes for the suckout, and while that's a nice sentiment, it doesn't make us feel any better about what just happened to us. Until next time, I'm Malcolm O'Malley saying sometimes you've just got to shake these ones off and move on to the next hand. I hope to see you on the felt.
That's poker?
Oh, that is brutal poker right there, bad boy.
Well, I mean, here's the thing, you know. We're both pretending to be very smart poker players here, right? And we came to two very different decisions on how we'd go here. So, had we folded like I would have, then we wouldn't have seen this horrendous bad beat happen to us. That's not a result-oriented question. I'm just pointing out the fact that either way you go here, you just have to go with what you think is right. I mean, and, as it turned out, the guy was a lot weaker than I thought he was. He was exactly what you thought he was. But even though you were right and O'Malley was right, they can still catch up to you. So, yeah, you know, yeah. there's no winners here except for the loser.
My final thought was pushed. Maybe we should invent a hold'em game with only a turn.
A turn. Yeah, you know, that's a common request out there. If it wasn't for the river, I'd win them all. And I want to tell the people, I want to kind of take them and put them in my little Sim City. You know, you still have that probably on my Mac Plus somewhere. And show them what the world will be like, kind of like George Bailey, 10 years from now. And everybody's like, oh my gosh, I would win them all if it wasn't for the turn. It's all relative, right?
Yeah, and of course it would be the river anyway, because it's the last card, so people will start calling the turn the river, and then you'd say, we should invent a game with only a flop.
Oh, man. But hey, I like the three-parter.
Yeah, I think it'll be the last one, though. It's too tough to keep track of. You like that payoff, you know what I mean? You don't want to wait 3 weeks.
Hi, this is Shauna Hyatt, and you're listening to Ante Up.
On June 28th, while Scott and I were out in Vegas at the Rio, a friend of Ante Up had his greatest poker achievement. Stephen Loeb, an attorney from Georgia and frequent Ante Up poker cruiser, captured the $1,500 PLO 8 title for his first bracelet and $267,000. Almost immediately, listeners told us, you got to have him on the show. So he's here today to talk with us about that remarkable run. Thanks for joining us, Steve.
Oh, no problem, guys.
You know, it's always remarkable to hear when someone we know wins a bracelet, but what's even more remarkable is that you won it in your first World Series event. What prompted you to play this year? Because we hear it was kind of spur of the moment.
Yeah, another attorney in my office was going to play, and he said, hey, I'm leaving. Why don't you come tomorrow? And so I left the day before the tournament, and like I said, it was the last-second decision, and I'm glad I did.
Man.
That's crazy. All right, well, there are nearly 1,000 players in this field, yet you really felt like you could win, so much so that you lost a lot of sleep. What gave you that confidence?
Well, I guess I've answered it before. I get big O back home, and I'm just real comfortable with the 4 or 5 card high-low. I think a lot more comfortable than the majority of people playing that tournament.
You know,
it's a game we play back home.
While we were out there, too, we noticed the emergence of Big O. It seemed like there was a lot of cash games going with that. When on previous years we were out there, we really didn't see it. And we've since introduced it to our home game but for you it was nothing new. What's exactly your experience with the game? Is it something that you guys just were playing Omaha and said, let's add another card, let's play Big O, or what exactly is that?
What Big O is?
You like what's your experience with the game? Is it just the home game? Is it
Well, the first time I played Omaha High Low it was in January.
Wow.
So I don't have that much experience playing it, but no, it's just I'm a Hold'em player just on the side, and it's just I went to a game and they were playing that, and they started playing it, and I liked it better.
Wow!
And the stakes are a lot higher because I mean it's very easy to get your money in when everyone always has something.
Right.
So stakes are higher, and there's a lot more decisions to make. I just like it better. I just think it's a lot more strategy involved.
Well, speaking of strategy, I can't wait to ask this question now, knowing that you only played this game for about 6 months before you won this tournament. What was your strategy going into this tournament?
I would call it nut peddling. I was just going to sit back and wait for the best hands. I mean, you know, it's a high-low game, so wait for the best high, the best low, and then become aggressive. Really tight and then aggressive when I had the best hands. I didn't know what to expect when I walked in the door, but when we sat down, I had a few buddies that were playing at this point, some people from back home and a couple people I met, and we just noticed that people don't know how to play the game. I mean, you're really getting your money in good in that tournament because a lot of people that are playing just have no idea what they're doing. And it's $1,500, but I guess it doesn't matter to some of them or they want to give it a try. But, yeah, I mean, it's just we just couldn't believe what people are putting their money in with.
Well, what are some of the adjustments that you have to make? Because you mentioned it's a five-card Omaha game that you play at home that's high stakes, and now you're playing a four-card PLO 8 game. Is there a distinct difference that you do with your adjustment in playing the game?
Well, I mean, like, I did find that I had to loosen up a little bit, but again, I mean, I just sat back and I was just being really, really patient and just waiting for my hands, and so it just was a few less hands an hour or a few less hands or whatever. I mean, it just that the hands weren't coming quite as quickly as I was used to them coming. Because one less card,
right.
But I mean, as the blinds went up, I started becoming a little looser, just because I had to be, or just take advantage of the smaller stacks. I got a fairly large stack from the get go, so I was really in a position to be patient and take advantage of smaller stacks, having to make moves with the crappy hands.
Now, you had mentioned that you know a lot of people didn't know what they were doing, but when the field got narrowed down and you were really gunning for the title, the competition got pretty decent then, didn't it? Wasn't it a pretty good field by then?
Kinda. Like, so I'm kind of embarrassed. Like, I'm sitting at tables and I have no idea who anybody is. I turned to a guy who turned out. I kind of learned as I went. Like, Kessler, Chainsaw Kessler, was sitting next to my left, and I turned to him and I said, so who are the pros at the table? He goes, well, I'm one of them. And I was like, oh, okay. And I didn't know who he was, and then I was sitting across from Barry Greenstein, and I didn't know who he was, and I didn't know anybody.
Wow.
And maybe that's to my advantage, maybe he just kind of embarrassed me as I was kind of being introduced to everybody. But, no, I mean, like, towards the end, there's about, I mean, when Kessler went in against me and I took him out, he took a picture of the hand and he's like, I can't believe this bad beat. This was horrible. And he tweeted about it. And like, I was like an 80% favorite.
Oh my
God. He didn't get it because he just didn't play he didn't play the game. I mean, you can just tell. And he's like, this is the sickest beat I've ever had. This was crazy. And another guy at the table who did know what he was talking about said, dude, that's not a bad beat at all. And he just wasn't listening. So it was, I mean, you were seeing really good players and really okay players making it deep because, I mean, you're still going to get lucky or whatever.
Yeah.
But no, I mean the British dude I sat next to who finished 11th, and he just went in with a horrible hand at the end, and that was, he finished 11th. I mean, it's just, it was really kind of mind-boggling to me.
Wow.
I'm glad you brought up the fact that there were pros there that you didn't recognize when I found out you were at the final table, I kind of ran over to say hi to you and wish you good luck. And I got there a little late, and you guys had already started playing, so I was watching a little bit from the, well, not really the railing, but underneath the stage. And I thought this was really funny, especially after you won. I heard a guy on the side talking to one of the guys at the final table and saying, hey, is my nemesis still in? And they're like, no, who? The guy in the four seat. And I'm like, hey, that's Steven! And he's like, that guy's terrible! And then I'm so glad the next day to hear that you won. I'm like, yeah, but he's not all that terrible.
Well, I don't know. I don't know who that was. I'd like to find out now. Well, I like to think I knew what I was doing, but hey, you know, I was just getting lucky. I don't know what I was doing.
But you know, I think that's great. I mean, it's, you know, not so many people, I think, in the World Series would be intimidated playing against some of the people that you were playing against, and it wasn't an intimidation for you because you didn't know who they were and you played your game. And I wonder how much of a big effect that had. Probably, I imagine.
I did recognize Jen Fratelli. That was cool.
Yeah, there you go. Right. You recognize the right ones.
Hey, was there a key moment during your run? Was there a key hand that really stands out?
You know, maybe it's bad, but I just remember the bat beats.
Oh, yeah.
Or, you know, I had one hand where everyone kind of talked to me about it, where it basically just involves getting runner to one hand. It was a really small hand, but everyone wants to talk about it later. I mean, it really had no effect on it, but I got really, really lucky to win the hand. But it was kind of a minor hand. And then, I remember the loser hands. I don't remember any of the real big ones. I mean, when I got back to the table and it was three-handed, I knew I had to, I was at third place at that point, and I knew I had to do something. And the big stack was a guy named Rocky, and he actually finished second. He finished, I think he finished second in the $3,000 tournament. He finished third in this one, so the guy's obviously really good.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I had to convince him. I knew I had the best hand pre-flop. I looked down, saw my hand, and this is like, I want to get my money in on this hand. And he and I had gone back and forth for hours. And I was trying to convince him to go all in, and I raced back against him, and he was looking at his hand. His hand actually wasn't that great. And I said, let's give up. You know, I was just trying to think of a way to get the money in. So I just tried to appear really strong, which usually means you're weak, I guess.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah.
So I tried to talk him into it. I'm like, I'm getting our money out of his hand. I'll do it if you want. And he thought for a long time and threw all his money in. And at that point, I doubled up, and he was kind of crippled. And that was kind of what won the tournament for me.
Wow.
Awesome.
So I don't know. That sticks out.
Okay, you were on record as saying it felt so much like work en route to this title. But we also know you prefer cash games. So considering the work involved in these tournaments, are you going to be entering more in the future, or was this one and done for you?
Well, I'm not one and done, but I probably won't see me until next year doing anything.
Okay.
Unfortunately, I get kind of busy back home, and I just got engaged 2 days ago, and we just bought a house 2 days ago, and we're just very busy. And I run a law firm, so. But I played my first game of poker last night.
Wow.
Since the tournament. I actually played another tournament at the World Series.
You know, since it was... Oh, go ahead. Well, since it
was
your...
I'm playing a few weeks. Your turn.
Well, it was your first World Series event, and you just happened to win it. So I'm just wondering if there's something you could tell our listeners for any advice for when they're about to enter their first World Series event.
I don't know, guys. Get really lucky. I couldn't begin to tell you. I just let people play, and I became really, really, really conservative. And I'm sure the next guy you ask the same question to will say, got to be aggressive or you can't possibly win. And, you know, my advice on that one was just to get really conservative. And my buddy who made the money in the next tournament was the same way. Just really, really conservative, because everyone's got a hand in that one. But
yeah,
that was just a horrible strategy. I couldn't begin to even think that I would be qualified to give anybody advice on poker.
All right, well, I'm going to ask you anyhow. Can you give us a tip on playing Big O?
Well, gosh, dude, we play every night for thousands of dollars, and we're always trying to get the same people. So it's like, I mean, I lost, you know, like $4,500 last night. So I don't know if I'm the one to get that, but I thought it was a bad night. But it's just a silly game. It's a ridiculous game. So it's my advice on playing Big O is to have a lot of money behind you, because you don't know how good you are, because how good you get your money in. It's a ridiculous game. So most of my advice is don't play it.
All right, well, we mentioned at the top of the segment that you'd been on our poker cruises. And then after you won the title, I had seen you in the Rio hallway the next day with your now-fiancée, Nina. And I congratulated you, but you were more interested in asking me about the cruises and stuff. Is it safe to say that you enjoy playing poker with us on the high seas?
Oh, we're kind of cruise folk. We like it because I'm so connected, and you know, my iPad and phone and emails, that it kind of forces me to get away.
Yeah.
And you guys know I love poker, so it's a good combination. We've gone with you guys what, twice now, and we're thinking about going in August again.
Awesome.
It's a good time. It's awesome. It's fun. It's fun to get, everyone's in a good mood when you're on a cruise, so it's a good crowd to play poker with.
Yeah.
No one's easily angry.
All right, well, we appreciate you joining us today, Stephen. What's next for you as far as poker?
Well, like I said, I might join you guys in August on your cruise. I was just asking about that the other day in an email. And just keep playing Big O back at home.
Excellent. Stephen, thanks for joining us today. Really appreciate taking some time, and congratulations again on that bracelet. That's awesome.
I appreciate it, guys.
Thanks, man.
All right, take care.
Bye-bye.
This is Daniel Negreanu of FullContactPoker.com. You're listening to Ante Up.
All right, I love when we get an email, Chris, that said the subject line, settle an argument.
Oh, man.
Because I already picture, even though I don't even know who it's coming from, I'm picturing these two guys just yelling and screaming at each other. You can't be serious. And they're like, I'm totally serious. And it's all about poker, which, you know, you should never get that upset about that. But so that's exactly what's going on here with our good friend, and he didn't give me a pronunciation, so I'm going to mantle it. Harvey.
Harvey, yeah, that sounds right. Like Villachez. Remember the guy, wasn't he the plane, right?
Oh, that was like Hermes.
Hervey, oh, close. That was close. Similar.
Close like Scott and Chris are close.
No, it's like the difference of one letter. It's like one letter.
One letter. All right, well, I apologize to our great Belgian friend here for hacking his name, but I did like his settle an argument here. And he said he's been listening to our program. It's a program now.
Yeah.
I feel like we should be on PBS.
Yeah, I feel like I should have a tie on right now.
Yeah. But he's been listening to us for over a year, really enjoys it, until right now, probably. He said, we helped him last year when he was at the Super Bowl, letting him know there are only electronic dealing tables in Indianapolis. Yeah, that's always a bummer.
Yeah.
Wait till you get sent to Orlando on a conference and try to find poker. Now, he says, I don't have a hand of the week or a situation as such, but I want your input on an argument with a friend of mine. And I'm going to tell you right now, this is a situation. It's also an argument, so it's a great one. It's a heated situation, Chris.
Yeah, pretty soon we're going to have the argument of the week. Because this has been happening a lot more often. People are asking us because they're fighting at home and they need us to settle it like some, you know, arbitration lawyer.
Yeah, it's tough. I'm a lover, not a fighter. So, all right, so he says he's been playing poker in Belgium and abroad for over 1.5 years and have gone from ABC poker to where I'm becoming competitive. All right, growing. I like that.
Okay.
He says sometimes even profitable.
Mm.
I don't know what that's like, but I just see he's ahead of my curve.
Hey, 11 Skittles is 11 Skittles, buddy.
It only paid for the appetizer.
That's right. There you go.
All right. So he's in a local casino. It was a freeze-out tournament, 40,000.
Oh, wait. What was it? Say it again. 40 players what?
40 players, starting stack, 5,000.
5,000. Okay.
All right. His friend is a loose aggressive and somewhat of a cerebral player. And he says that if this makes the podcast, make sure Scott has to read Cerebral. I'd like to see how he deals with that. It's nightmare for dyslexics. Look at that. I nailed dyslexics,
though. Yeah, you're pretty good at that.
All right, 15 players left. This loose aggressive friend has gone up and down. His average stack is about, or the average stack, I'm sorry, at the tournament is 13,000 now, and he has about 10,000.
Okay.
Some players have bigger stacks, but a lot hover around the average. He is under the gun with ace, deuce suited. Blinds are 600, 1200. Antes are 200. And he goes all in. One guy calls with pocket aces. And he's out. He's done.
Right.
Gone.
Yep.
All right. Now, our hero here says his friend's reasoning was that with most people on a fairly low M, people need a pretty good hand to call him. I contend that the only thing I would do is possibly limp late, but throw this away early. I know the math. He is about 55% heads up, but his kicker is so low, you're asking for trouble as anybody with a higher hand than pocket nines might pull the trigger. Besides, it's not as if we wouldn't get some more opportunities with perhaps a better starting hand. So the question is, what would you do?
Okay. First, I I remember this letter because I think we reacted to this, both of us. And I have to admit that I would never shove with ace deuce under the gun. I mean, what I said, I think what I added to the argument was, when he says that somebody has a low M that they need a good hand to call or to whatever, I think that was, to me, in my experiences, when you have a low M, you're looking to get it in with any decent holding, not a good holding. You know what I mean? Because you have an M, you have to pick a good hand to go with. And if I would think that if you had ace deuce, anybody with ace 8, ace 9 who has a low M will probably call. Anybody who has any pair now, if they have any pair at all, you have to hit an ace now and hope the ace is good. And if you're up against another ace, you're way in trouble. You're 75-25 because you have to hit your deuce to win. And it's because you're under the gun, you have so many people behind you to act. And since you're under the gun, you have a bunch of hands left that you could certainly get it in first in another hand in another situation with fewer players behind you to act. You have the entire table behind you to act with just ace deuce. I just don't think a shove there is a good move at all, and I certainly wouldn't have limped with it either. I just would have mucked it.
Yeah, I mean, you hit all the right points there. I mean, I would never push with a weak ace, even in position, to be honest. Well, never is a strong word, but very rarely am I going to push with a weak ace. And, you know, you made the good point that anyone who calls you has a really good shot of beating you, regardless of what they have.
Yeah.
If they have an ace, you're definitely outkicked, and then you're hoping for that miracle two or a chop. That's not fun. If they have anything else, they have two live cards against you at best, and your deuce isn't going to help you very much at all. And then I invented two new words too, Chris, my response. Suitedness and connectiveness. And I said, you know, they help a little bit in desperation, but come on, they're really not going to sell me on this at all. And to me, the big thing is the last thing you mentioned is that we're under the gun right now.
Yeah.
We have to fade the entire table with this weak holding to double up here, because if we get called, you don't want to get called here. What you're trying to do is hope you have fold equity here and get everybody and pick up the blinds. You got so many people to fade with this hand. It just doesn't make any sense. So if you fold, which I think is what you're going to do, right?
Yep, I'm folding.
Here's what happens next. You're in the blinds the next two hands. You still have 10 big blinds, which is not great, and particularly because there's Andy's, but it's still something. And now, at that point, this is where the position changes everything now. Now, everyone else will act before you have to look at your cards on the next hand.
Yep.
And you can make the best possible decision at that point. You know, if you have a couple limpers in, you can shove and try to pick up the dead money, or get it, or you can check and get a free look at the flop, which is huge. You know, these things. And when it gets to these parts of the tournament, I mean, you're almost everybody's shoving or calling pre-flop. You know, you're not going to limp at this point with that those limited stacks. But in the big blind, you have an opportunity to get a look at that flop. I mean, you could have seven deuce in the big blind the next hand, check, and see a flop of deuce, deuce, deuce. You know, it's the odds are against it, but it's possible. I mean, this is an opportunity for you to see a flop, and then if you hit something big or something like that, then you can get it in a much better spot.
Yep.
And then even if you if it's raised and re-raised and you have to fold a big blind, and the same thing happens in the small blind, at that point you still got about 10K on the button, where you still have, you know, a lot more of information, and you could probably shove with a wide range and have some fold equity and get the blinds out, and then at that point you've picked up the blinds and the antes, you're live for another round.
Yep.
I can't imagine even ever thinking shoving ace deuce is good there.
No, and then, you know, again, the thing about the people that he thinks are going to fold, you know, they're just, if they're short and you look down a king queen, you're calling. Yeah, okay, you're ahead because you have an ace, but really that deuce kills you, you know, and if they do have any ace, you're totally screwed. It's just, I mean, it's a nice looking hand if you're on the button and you're short and you only have the blinds behind you. I might shove then, because, you know, it's probably standard, I think. But other than that, you know, because you're forced those two to have a hand, whereas now you have 10 people who have the choice, or 9, whatever, the choice to decide to call. It's just, it's a bad move all around, I think. I can't imagine that being a good move.
Yeah. you know, you have to think about survival here. Yeah. I think that the weird thing is, I think that's what his friend was thinking about. Is, you know, hey, I'm short stack now. I got to get it in now, and I've got some fold equity, and it's just it's misplaced, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it does think that you have to pay the blinds after that, and your stack's going to be even shorter to try to.
What about dramatically different? Right. I mean, right, he's at 13,000 now, be down to 10. I mean, yeah, percentage wise, that's a big bump. But you know, you're still at, we don't know what the blinds are going up here, but if not, there's still it's 1,200, and you have 10K.
Yeah.
That's enough to make somebody fold.
Yeah. Yeah. Brutal. Yeah, I would never have done that.
All right, well, Hervé, whatever your name is that I mangled, we appreciate you sitting in. We hope we settled your argument. I know you're probably happy with the response. and we're going to go ahead and send you a download of the Chinese 13-card poker app for Apple products from Smapsoft. Remember, folks, you don't have to be a winner to enjoy this great app. You can go and download it yourself by visiting the iTunes store. And remember to send us your hands of the week to podcasts@anyupmagazine.com, and you too might be a swag winner in the future.
Thanks to Stephen Loeb, our brand new, newly minted bracelet winner and frequent Anyup Poker Cruiser. Just a fantastic run for him, and glad he joined us today. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the tables.
Annie Up is a production of AnnieUpMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.